about some of the halachas of Dalet Minim. What are the things that a person should keep in mind when purchasing a set of Dalet Minim? What are some of the halachas that they might encounter in terms of the sale itself? Maybe if we have a little bit of time at the end, we'll talk a little bit about the mitzvah of Netilas Lulav as well. So we know that there are four different minim. The Pasuk in Parashas Emor talks about four different minim that you have to take on Sukkos. Before I begin, I just want to mention there are a few beautiful svarim that have been written about Dalet Minim in the not-so-recent past, but they've really become classics. I think one of the classics is, of course, Kashrus Dalet Minim, written by Rabbi Chil Michel Stern, written over 30 years ago. It was first published in Tovshin Nun Beis. So the pictures that I have on the board that I'm going to be sharing with you are all from that sefer. It's a glossy, you know, glossy page sefer with all the pictures. It's murdik. It's just, he goes through all of Hilchas Dalet Minim and really explains things and presents a lot of the machlokasim. It's a wonderful, wonderful sefer. There's also a sefer Torahs Dalet Minim written by Rav Schneebalg, who was a big paisik in Muncie for many, many years. Now he moved to England to take over his father's position there. But for many years he had a shul in Muncie, and he was a big paisik, especially in Dalet Minim. He had a line out the door of his house for about a month before Yom Tov, people showing him Dalet Minim to judge, is this kosher, is it pasul? They showed him a bunch of lulav, five lulavim, which one is the best? Which one should I take? He's a big, big expert. So he wrote a number of svarim. They're called Torahs Dalet Minim, different volumes. The first volume talked about the basic halachas, and then he came out with other volumes that discussed other interesting shailas and ha'oras and what he said before. Also wonderful, wonderful svarim. So, you know, there are a lot of svarim out there that you can go through and find many of the halachas. I'm just going to try to give a brief overview, an outline of some of the halachas, so we get a sense of what we're looking for. And then v'idach zil gemar, if you want to learn more about it, then you can look in the svarim, and hopefully you'll be able to find what you need. Let's first talk about the esrog. The esrog is the first min that's mentioned in the Torah, l'kachta lachem bayom harishon pri'etzadar. Pri'etzadar, Chazal say, is an esrog. So the first shaila to address regarding an esrog is the shaila of esrog hamurkav. What happens if you have a grafted esrog? An esrog that comes from a tree that was grafted. Now the experts say that it's not uncommon to graft the esrog tree with other branches because the esrog tree by nature is a very weak tree. It doesn't survive, you know, harsh winters, and it's not very strong. So often they try to graft it with other trees to keep it stronger. The most common tree, from what they say, Rav Chil Michel Stern says, they graft it with what's called the chuschus tree. That's a tree that they happen to graft the esrog tree with. So the shaila comes up, is that an esrog? You know, is an esrog hamurkav kosher, is it pasul? So interestingly enough, the Bach in a tshuva, I didn't put the Bach in the Maror Makomos, but the tshuva sabach in Simen Kuf Lamed Vav wants to say that maybe esrog hamurkav is kosher because this psul is not mentioned in the Mishnayos at all. How can it be pasul? To apostle, if they mention the Mishnayos, there's a whole Mishnah on Daf Lamed Hey in Sukkah, Daf Lamed Dalet Amid Beis, of all the psulim of esrog. So why is it not mentioned in the Mishnah? So he says it must be that it's kosher. That's what he suggests, but he's not so sure about it. But that's what the Bach does say. Most poskim assume that esrog hamurkav is possible. The question is, why is it possible? So the Levush says that it's possible because nevda ba'avera. It's a mitzvah ba'avera. They did navera to be markiv ilon. The Elon to create this esrog hamurkav, it's a mitzvah babaver. We don't fulfill the mitzvah with such a chefetz. The Taz suggests that it's because it's chaser. We know chaser is one of the psulim of the Dalet Minim. Chaser is one of the psulim of the Dalet Minim. Lekachtem lechem lekicha. It has to be a lekicha tama. It has to be a full lekicha. I'll try to move back and forth here. Okay, Yonah, I'll try to do my best. Lakicha taman has to be a full lakicha. If it's chaser, if it's missing something, missing in the min, so it's pasul. Right? So he wants to say that esrog hamurkav is a combination of esrog and another tree, so therefore, it's chaser. The Magen Avraham says the simplest reason. He says, you know why an esrog hamurkav is pasul? Because it doesn't have a shem esrog. It's not called an esrog. To be an esrog, it has to be 100% esrog. If it's murkav, so it's a new fruit. If it's a new fruit, it's not called an esrog. Different reasons given, but we assume that an esrog hamurkav is possible. There's a famous tshuva of the Ramah that the Mishnah Bura quotes in Siman Tov Resh Mem Ches Sivkot and Samachay, where the Ramah says that there are certain simonim that can distinguish between an Esrog HaMurkav and an Esrog HaKosh. Now, if someone tells you an Esrog HaMurkav is possible, so you say, so what am I supposed to do? How do I know that it's Murkav or not Murkav? So the tshuva of the Ramah says there are four simonim for an Esrog HaKosh. One is that there are blitas, there are bumps on the Esrog. You see in the picture over here, there are bumps. We're all familiar with this. But there are bumps on the side of the Esrog, as opposed to a lemon, for example. Lemon doesn't have bumps. It's smooth. Right? So first of all, the Esrog has bumps. Secondly, the ukits, the lower stem is shakua. It's sunken into the Esrog. Thirdly, the klipa, the peel of the Esrog is thick. The peel of the lemon is thinner. The peel of the Esrog is thick. And fourth, the seeds of the Esrog are vertical. The vertical as opposed to horizontal. These are four simanim that the Ramah says can distinguish. They can tell you, if you have something that has these four simanim, you know that it's an Esrog HaKosh. The Chasam Sofer in a tshuva wants to suggest that it's nice to have all the simanim, but the reality is you can't be Machshir and Esrog without a Mesorah. That's the big chumra of the Chasam Sofer. The Chassidim follow the Chasam Sofer. They're very into the Chasam Sofer in general. So this Chasam Sofer, made it, the Mishnah Berurah quotes it too, that you can only be Machshir and Esrog through Mesorah. So that's why many, many individuals, many poskim, are not happy with simply going with the simonim. I think the badatz of Yerushalayim is makel for the simonim. What they do is, if someone owns an orchard of Esrogim, they want the badatz to give their hechsher on his orchard. So he has the dayan from the badatz come down. And they open up a group of Esrogim from different parts of the orchard. They'll open up five from here and five from here and five from there, you know, and they test them. And they see, does it have a thick peel? Does it have a thick peel? Is the ukat shakua? Is it ablitas? You know, what's with the seeds? They do the simonim. They check for the simonim on the esrogim. And if they're happy enough with the esrogim, they should be completely happy, right? If all the esrogim conform to the proper simonim, so then the badatz is willing to put it gestempel on that orchard. But other posts can feel that that's not enough. It's not enough because we need a mesorah for dalet minim, like the Chasam Sofer. So that's why some are very medactic to buy dafka, what's called a chazan ish esrog, from pardesim that the chazan ish, come from esrogim that the chazan ish said are okay. Or they buy what's called yanaver esrogim. Yanaver are from Italy. A lot of the chassidim buy yanaver esrogim. Or they buy Moroccan esrogim. Reb Chaim apparently liked the Moroccan esrogim. Now, of course, the question is, but where did that mesorah come from? Reb Chaim didn't know that this Moroccan esrog had a mesorah, you know, from the time that it was originally created, right? The Chazan Ish, you know, how did he know that there was a mesorah? He didn't have a mesorah. So the answer is the Chazan Ish saw a certain tree when he was in Eretz Yisrael. He saw a tree that Epis must have been abandoned, and it was a weak tree. There was nothing doing over there. So the Chazan Ish felt, Beruach Kotshel, he felt that this tree was not Murkav. It's clear that it wasn't Murkav. The tree wasn't, it looked like an Esrog tree, because it was weak like an Esrog tree. And in fact, the Chazan Ish Esrogim for many, many years did not look so good. They didn't look good because it's not so simple, right? The Esrog tree naturally is very, very weak. So the Chazan Ish says, this is a Kosher Esrog, this must not be Murkav. So they took from that tree and they planted in different orchards, they planted from that tree, and that became the Chazan Ish Esrogim, because the Chazan Ish had a feeling that this Esrog tree must be a Kosher Esrog, and then everyone else took the Mesorah of the Chazan Ish and they ran with it. So it's a little interesting. It's not a full Mesorah. It's not like we have a Mesorah from the time that the tree was created, but it's still more than just checking the Simanim of the tree and just relying on the Simanim and saying that the Esrog is an Esrog HaKosher. And of course, when they took the Chazan Ish Esrogim, so then they started to work on them. They didn't graft, but they did things to strengthen the tree, to make sure that the soil was good and it was fertilized properly, and they worked on it as much as they could, you know, ba'ofen shel heter, and over time, the Chazan Ish Esrogim became much, much better. Now, sometimes you can't even tell the difference between the Chazan Ish Esrogim and the other. It used to be the Chazan Ish Esrogim never had pitums. Now, they have pitums sometimes. So, you know, if you know how to work the Esrog tree properly, and you have Siyata Dishmaya, then you can have an Esrog with a good Mesorah, and yet it'll be a strong Esrog, it'll be a beautiful Esrog too. Okay, this is the first issue to address, that is Esrog HaMurkav. Let's move to Nitla Pitmasa. Questions? Yes?
Wouldn't one be better, say, if someone wants to take a chumrah, wouldn't it be better to take a chumrah that where you actually know the person who planted the tree and you know the entire life of the tree?
But you don't know where that person got the seeds from. Right? Any tree that's, you know, Chazanish Esrogim in California came from the original trees. It's all, there are so many offshoots of the Chazanish trees. I mean, obviously you need to be able to trust the person that you're buying the Esrog from, that you actually got it from the Chazanish trees. So they have Ashgachas on them. But, I mean, you have to know that it came from the source. The Chazan Shesrog are much more expensive than other Esrog. The Anavar Esrog, Moroccan Esrog, I think, are not as expensive. They're also not as nice. But very often Moroccan Esrog are very clean, but they don't look as yellow. They don't look as pure as the yellow that you see on this picture. So look, there are different Hidurim. We'll talk about some of the Hidurim as we move along. Yes?
Can you maybe repeat the four Simonim
that you guys are looking at? Sure. The Kosher Esrog has blitos, it has bumps. The Ukitz is Shokua. The lower stem, where the esrog is attached to the tree, it's shaku, it's sunken into the esrog, as opposed to being flat, right? Sunken into the esrog. The peel is thicker, and the seeds grow vertically in the esrog. They don't grow horizontally, like in the lemon. The most famous psul of an esrog that they teach all of the children is that if the pitum of the esrog falls off, then the esrog is pasul. Okay, nitla pitmasa. This is mentioned in the Mishnah. The Mishnah Daf Lamed Aleph Amud Beis. Nidla Pitmasa, Pasul V'Nidl Uktzo is Kosher. What does that mean, Nidla Pitmasa? So Rashi and the Rambam and Rov Rishonim say that the Pitum does not refer to the ball on top of the Esrog. That's called the Shoshanta. Right? The ball on top of the stem, that's the Shoshanta. I think it says it in the picture. The Shoshanta is the ball. So that's not the Pitum. That's not the Pitum, most Rishonim say. But rather, the Pitum is that the stem is taken off. The stem fell off. Not just the Shoshanta. When the stem falls off, that's what the Gemara calls Nitla Buchnaso. That means not just the Shoshanta, but even the stem as well. The question is, how much of the stem has to fall off for that to be called Nitla Pitmaso? That's a big machlokas. The Magen Avram is of the opinion that Dafka, if the entire stem is taken off of the Esrog, then it's possible. But if the pitum, as we call it, the pitum falls off, even the pitum falls off, you know, it gets a little cut, but you still see a little bit of stem. According to the Magen Avraham, that's okay. Big cooler. According to the Magen Avraham, a little bit of the stem is there, that's okay. The Taz goes even further. It says the only time that Nidla Pitmasa is going to be a problem is if so much of the stem is cut off that it's like there's a chor, there's like a hole in the esrog. You sometimes see this. Right? We'll talk about the esrogim that don't have a pitum. They grew without a pitum. So sometimes you have to figure out, did this esrog grow without a pitum, or the pitum fell off? So sometimes you see there's like a hole, right? There's like a crevice in the top of the esrog. So the Taz says only if the pitum fell off completely, the stem fell off completely, now there's a chor, there's even a hole in the esrog, that's called nitla pitmasa. The Ramah says that sama machmer, even if only the shoshanta fell off, but the Mishnah Berurah points out that's based on a faulty understanding of the riff. It's not really the correct understanding. So really, some of the stem has to fall off as well in order for there to be a problem of Nidla Pitmasa. The Mishnah Berurah writes that if the Shoshanta falls off, look, if you have another Esrog, better to take the other Esrog, but I wouldn't passel the Esrog because the Shoshanta fell off. That's not a reason to passel the Esrog. What's more, after the first day of Yom Tov, there's even more of a reason to be machshir the esrog after the first day of Yom Tov. Right? The first day of Yom Tov this year is when?
Shabbos.
Shabbos. So we're not even going to be taking a lulav and esrog the first day. We're taking the second day. Okay, Yom Tov Sheni, Safik Rishon, but it shows you the chumras are much less this year. So after the first day of Yom Tov, let's say Chol HaMoed. Forget Yom Tov Sheni. That's a Safik, whether it has a din of Yom Tov Rishon or not. But let's say Chol HaMoed. Is there a problem of Nidla Pitmaso on Chol HaMoed? So to answer that question, we first have to take a step back and examine different psulim. You know, there are different psulim in the Dalaminim. There are psulim of let's say, Chaser. It's not a Lekicha Tama. It's not a Lekachtem. It's not a full Lekicha. It's missing something. And then there are psulim of Hodar. Right? It's not beautiful. Right? The Minim are supposed to be Hodar. Not just the Esrog, where it says Priyat Hodar, but all the Minim have to be Hodar. So are these psulim of chaser and a lack of hadar, do they apply only on Yom Tov Rishon? Do they apply on Yom Tov Sheni? As well, they apply on Chol HaMoed as well, I should say. So the Gemara Daf Lamed Vav in Sukkah says beferish that the psul of chaser does not apply after Yom Tov Rishon. Gemara tells a story that Rabbi Chanina was matbil ba v'nofik ba. That after Yom Tov Rishon, Rabbi Chanina would dip his esrog into something and he'd take a bite out of it. And then he would use it for the mitzvah. Now, why did he do that? He probably did that to teach the Talmidim this din, right? He didn't have to take a bite before he did the mitzvah, right? But that's what he did. So that shows you that chaser is kosher on the other days, right? He took a bite out of his esrog, so it was chaser. So chaser is kosher on the other days. How about hadar? So hadar is a machlokas in the Rishonim. Some Rishonim say that hadar is also pasul only on the first day, right? That happens to be the position of the Rambam. But Tosfos, another Rishonim, Tosfos at the beginning of Lulav HaGozal, Chav Tes and Beis, Tosfos says Hadar is a psul all 7 days. He tries to explain what the difference is between Chaser and Hadar, but he says they're different. Chaser is only psul the first day, and Hadar is psul the entire Yom Tov. There's a major machlokas, the Mechaber and the Ramah, had a paskin. Are we paskin like the Balei Tosfos or paskin like the Rambam regarding the psul of Hadar? Is Hadar a psul all of Yom Tov, or is it only psul on the first day? So the question is, what's the din of Nitla Pitmasa? Is that a psul of chaser, or is it a psul of hadar? So the Ramah writes that it's a psul of chaser. The Ramah says it's a psul of chaser. And because it's a psul of chaser, it's not a psul on Chol HaMoed. It's not a psul on Chol HaMoed. Not everyone agrees, but that's the Ramah's position. So what comes out is that according to the Ramah, even if the esrog were nitla pitmaso mamish, nitla pitmaso, the stem is cut off, there's even a hole in it, like according to the Taz, you'd have to be machma too. The Ramah would say, on Chol HaMoed, it's kosher v'yasha. It's totally kosher. There's no problem with it whatsoever. So it's something to consider. You know, if a balabas comes to you and asks a shal, you're rav in a shul, balabas comes and it's hard for him to get another esrog. He bought this esrog and he comes on Chol HaMoed and the pitum completely fell off and he says, I need another esrog. Is this possible? So it's not possible. It's not possible. It might not be the greatest hiddur, right? The esrog is not as mahudah if it's missing the pitum, but in the scheme of things, he could definitely make a bracha, that's for sure. Chol HaMoed, according to the Ramah, he definitely would be able to make a bracha on such an esrog. Now how about an esrog that doesn't have a pitum at all? So that's also a Ramah. The Ramah in Siman Tov Resh Mem Tes in Siv Zayin, he says that if the esrog grew without a pitum, then it's kosher. That's the way it grew. So that's kosher. So some ask, Rav Schneebalg and Taras Dal Aminim and others, Rav Meir Brandsdorfer and Knevosim, other Achronim ask, but the fact that it grows like that, it's still not Hadar. I mean, Hadar is an objective reality, so what does it matter that it grew that way, it didn't grow that way? If the Esrog is supposed to have a pitum, because that's what an Esrog looks like, so what does it matter that it grew that way, it didn't grow that way? So someone has suggested, maybe the Ramah is Lishitasa. If the Ramah assumes that the Psul of Nidla Pitmaso is a Psul of Chaser, so maybe if it grew that way, it's not chaser. It never had it to begin with. Chaser means the esrog had something and now it's missing. So it's missing that thing. So maybe the Ramah is lishitaso, that he assumes the whole psul of nidla pitmaso was chaser. This is not chaser because the esrog didn't grow that way initially. Then it's not chaser if it's missing the pitmaso. Yes?
Can you explain the Tosfos assuming that someone took a bite out of an esrog, that would still be chaser?
Apparently, yes, because the esrog intrinsically is hadar, right? The esrog is hadar, it just is missing something, it's chaser. Is there something, you're saying the esrog doesn't look nice because it has a bite taken out of it. So apparently not, apparently that's still considered hadar, because the beauty of the esrog is still there, it just happens to be chaser. Another psul of an esrog is shinui mara. Let's say there's a discoloration on the esrog. The Gemara in Daf Lamed Hey says, what happens if olsa chazozes al mi'uto b'makom echad? Kosher. If you have a chazozes, some kind of a growth on the esrog. I don't think we see too many chazozes. Chazozes means like a real growth on the esrog. But the principle is important for us. You'll see. So the Gemara says that if the chazozes, the Mishnah says, if olsa chazozes on the esrog, it's possible. So the Gemara says, if it's only b'miuto, b'makom echad, then it's kosher. But if it's b'shnayim u'shloshim u'komos, then it's pasul. Because havalei k'menumer, then it's like a spotted esrog. And a spotted esrog is not hodah. So you have a chazazis on one spot, a small part of the esrog, that's okay. But if it's on multiple parts of the esrog, then it's a problem. Okay? That was the picture of Nitla Shoshanta. This is a Shinimar. Okay, you have a Shinimar in the Esrig. So if it's on Shnayim or Shloshim Makomo, so then it'll be a problem. That's not a Chazazis. That's just a Shinimar. It's a black spot. We'll get to it. Okay, so the Gemara says a Chazazis on Shnayim or Shloshim Makomos is possible because of Havalekim and Numer. But if it's on Makom Echad Al Miyuto, then that's kosher. So comes the Rosh and says, not just also Chazazis, the Rosh says, V'hu Adinami Amara Shachar Olavan. If you have a black spot or a white spot on the Esrig, that also will pass on the Esrig. If it's B'Shnayim B'Shlosh Mekamos. Now what does that mean, B'Shnayim B'Shlosh Mekamos? The Rosh continues to explain, he calls from the Ravid, that it means that the B'Shnayim B'Shlosh Mekamos are spread out on the surface area of the Esrig. Now what does that mean? Spread out, it's mispazer. It's not all in one spot, but it's mispazer and rove of the Shetach of the Esrig. What does that mean? That's a machlokas achronim. Some say that if it's mispazer on rove of the circumference of the esrig, the different ways, you know, that could be in different forms. Like here, you see it's rove of the circumference, the side, look at the side view of the esrig, rove of the circumference. You have three spots in the rove of the circumference of the esrig. Or you might have like this kind of thing, right? That's not rove of the circumference, but it's rove of the esrig this way. Right, I guess the vertical circumference of the esrog, not the horizontal circumference of the esrog. Right, some say that the pasul. Others say, I think the Chazon Ish says only number 15, only the bottom picture with pasul, where it's not just the circumference; it's rove of the surface area of the esrog. It has to be spread out in such a way that if you cut the esrog in half and connect all the dots, that will be rove of the surface of the esrog is enclosed within these shinui marim. Okay. But there's a special halacha for the chotem of the esrog. The chotem of the esrog, the Gemara says, b'chotmo afilu b'mashu pasal. In the chotem, you don't need two or three spots, even one spot. One spot, that's a shinimara. That's a shinimara. So black and white, according to the Rosh, is a shinimara. So if you have one spot on the chotem, then that would be a problem. What is the chotem? That's a big machlokas in the Rishonim too. The Rosh holds that the entire sheep, the shipua, the slant of the vase, the slant of the esrog on top, you know, as it slants up toward the pitim, that's the chotem. The Chasam Sofer says that's what the Bali Hara assume, that that's the pitim. But others are more makel. Others say, the Rambam says that only the very top of the esrog. Right, there are two shittas in the top. Some say the bump of the esrog where the pitum comes out of, where the stem of the pitum comes out of, and some say the stem of the pitum itself is the chotem. That's dalet. Gimel is the bump, and dalet is even higher than that. Right, gimel, he says over here, shittas aram mokom shetachas hapitum. The dalet shittas aramim is who hadad. Right, that's the top. The stem of the pitum itself. That's a big kula, because then if you have a shinimara on the slant, then you don't have to be choshesh for it. But most of the Mori Hara assume, like the Rosh, that the chotem is the entire slanted area, the upper slanted area of the esrog. So if you have a shinimara in the chotem, it's going to be a problem, even if it's one dot. How small a dot? How small a dot? So the Magen Avraham quotes from the Mabit that Chazazis and any Shinimara only pasul if it's nira la'ayin, if you can see it. If you can see it, says the Mabit, if you can see it, when you hold the esrig in your hand, meaning in a normal way. It has to be niris la'ayin when you're ochez es ha'esrog biyodo. You have to hold it in your hand in a normal way. That makes a lot of sense, because the whole idea of the chotem is that it's nira la'ayin. The upper part of the esrog, it's more near the ayin than the bottom or the side, so it makes sense that the shinimara is only going to pass if it's near the ayin. Why am I making a big deal out of this? So do you have to look with a magnifying glass to see whether it's black or not black? Chorid should be a function of how you see with your eyes. If it's near the ayin, so then it'll pass. If you have to look with a magnifying glass and it's not near the ayin, it's not nicker, so if it's not nicker, it shouldn't be a problem at all. So why did the Mori Hara look with the magnifying glass? Many Mori Hara look at them. So sometimes they're looking with the magnifying glass to see chaser. To see chaser, maybe you need a magnifying glass. Because chaser is an objective reality. If the effect is missing something, it's possible. So that might not be a function of nira la'ayin. But shinei mara is a psul of hoder, not a psul of chaser. So at first glance, you shouldn't really need the magnifying glass. Some poskim say the reason why they use the magnifying glass is because, you know, they're older. Often the poskim are a little bit older. And their eyes are not functioning as well as a good pair of eyes. Now, there is a principle that ein l'dayin elamasha ein of ro'os, but that's not what that phrase means. It means that what the dayin thinks is correct. But when you really need your eyes, maybe we don't look at someone whose eyes aren't as good anymore. You know, you have a 70-year-old posek who says we follow his eyes. We should follow the standard set of eyes, you know, a younger pair of eyes. So maybe that's why the posek can feel like I can't see so well. I see like I can't read so well. I need multiple pairs of glasses just to function. So at that point, it might make sense to use a magnifying glass just to be able to see clearly what you're seeing, just to be able to see in a normal way. So I think that's probably why the posek can use a magnifying glass. But technically speaking, if you're a young person and your eyes are good, Baruch Hashem, so if you don't see it, if you don't see the dot, it ain't there. You know, there's a limit to how much you have to see. It has to be Nikola Ayin when you're holding the Esrig in a normal fashion. Okay. Have a bletlach. What are bletlach? Bletlach are scabs. Bletlach are scabs that grow on the Esrig. The experts say that they grow on the Esrig. Not such a great picture of bletlach, but it's, you see a little bit. You see like the scab. It grows on the Esrig, and the Esrig hits like a thorn. The wind blows the esrog, and there are thorns and other things, the branches. So when it hits something and it gets a wound, so it develops a scab, just like a human being, right? When you, it's just the esrog scabs often don't repair completely. Maybe sometimes they do repair completely, but you know if it's hit by a thorn close to the time that you cut the esrog off, obviously it's not going to repair completely. So what's the status of a bletel, a scab on the esrog? So the Shulchan Aruch, in Tafresh Mem Tes Sif Yud Gimel, he says that a chazazes is kemin avabur sheyesh behen mamash shemakomo nikar b'mishmo shu gavo mishar esrog. A chazazes is something you can feel. You can feel the discoloration. So the Achronim have a debate. What's the status of bletlach? Bletlach that you can feel. So the position of the Maril is that they're a shinimara. They're the same status as a chazazes. The big chumr. The Chumash Hadeshin is a big makel in this. The Chumash Hadeshin says, even if you can feel them, so you think it's like a chazazah, discoloration? No. The Chumash Hadeshin says the bletlach are not a shini mara because they're mara esrog. Because a lot of esrogim have bletlachs. It's a normal color on the esrog. It's not like black and white. Black spots and white spots. That's a normal mara for an esrog. So it's not a shini mara. Not a shini mara. It's a big cooler because according to the Chumash Hadeshin, even if you have bletlach in Shnayim Ushloshim Akomos, even if you have bletlach on Rove of the Shatach of the Esrog, it's not going to passel because it's not a Shinei Mara. It's part of the Mara Esrog. It's not going to passel. Big cooler, very important cooler. How about black dots? Like not a black spot or a white spot, but just black dots on an Esrog. What's the status of that? Now, we talked about a black spot and a white spot. That is a shini mara according to the Rosh. We talked about bletlach. How about black dots? So, according to the Chumash Hadeshin, what really emerges is that bletlach is really, it's a yesod. The idea of bletlach is that something that's normal on the esrog is not called a shini mara. It's not a shini mara because it's a normal occurrence. When the Shulchan Aruch says that black is a shini mara, so it would have to be black that appears on the esrog, that's abnormal. Meaning, if it's a spot of black, that's abnormal. Have you ever seen a yellow esrog with a spot of black, like a big spot, like you saw in the picture? I haven't really seen such an esrog, right? It's not normal to have such a black spot, or a big white spot. It's an abnormal color. But black dots? A black dot so uncommon? So many poskim want to say that maybe black dots are not so uncommon. Just a dot? A black dot? It's not uncommon. I'm not talking about brown dots. Brown dots, everyone would say, is not a shini mara. Right? Brown dots are totally normal. It might be a hiddah to try to get an esrog that's completely clean, that doesn't even have a brown dot on the chotan. But brown dots certainly wouldn't passel, even if you have brown dots in different spots and it's on rove of the shatach of the esrog, most of the surface area, brown dots would not passel the esrog because it's not a shini mara, it's not black, it's not white, it's not a shini mara. But how about black dots? So some people say, well, first of all, who claims that black dots are shini mara b'chlal? They're totally normal. Rav Shechter is very fond of saying that the only black dot that passes in esrog is a black dot that comes on the esrog because of decay. Right? If you look at the black and you see that the esrog is decaying there, so that's a black dot that would be a problem. But if not, a black dot itself is not a shini mara because it's a normal mara li esrog. This yesod Rav Shechter suggests is actually a Bikur Yaakov. The Bir Halacha quotes that from the Bikur Yaakov, that it's only shochar machmas ipush. He says Bir Halacha is in Tov Resh Memches. Tov Resh Memches in Sif Yud Gimel. The Ramaskal Avabul. Not Sif about Bletlach. He quotes on the Bikur Yaakov that only shochar machmas ipush. If it's black because of decay, so that's a problem. But if not, black is not a shini mara. Many poskim are machmir for black. They're very careful for that. I'm suggesting that there are those that are makel, but there's room to be makel. But many poskim would be makel for brown, but if they have a black dot on the chotem, they would say, try to find another esrog. They would say that might pass. Because they assume that black is a shinimara, and even a dot, even a black dot would be a shinimara. They wouldn't pass for a brown dot. They might say it's not as mehuder as a completely clean esrog, but it certainly would not pass the esrog. And finally, in terms of shinimara, what's the status of green? Yorok, green. So there's a machlokas tanoim in the Mishnah in Sukkah Daf Lamed Daled Amebeis, where the yorok kekarti is kosher. Right? Yorok kekarti. What does that mean? So yorok, we know, normally means yellow, actually, in Chazal. But yorok kekarti means green. So we pask in yorok kekarti is posel. Tosis and Daf Lamed Aleph, not there. The Mishnah is on Daf Lamed Daled and Beis, but Tosis on Lamed Aleph and Beis quotes from the Rishalmi. Then what does Yorok Kekarti mean? Green like leek. Green like leek. Tosis says it means Yorok Ke'isvei HaSoda. Green like that. A deep green. Right? The problem is the leek, it has different shades of green on it, right? It has the lighter part, the white part, the lighter part, and the darker part. So they assume that Yorok Ke'isvei HaSoda means the darker part of the leek. And that's an example of an esrog that would be very green. Yorok Ke'isvei HaSoda. So that's possible. We pass that's possible. Why is it possible? What's the problem? It's in the Mishnah Berurah in Sivkot and Samachay. Simen Tofresh Memches Sivkot and Samachay. The Mishnah Berurah quotes the Machlokas, the Bach and the Magen Avraham. The Bach says, Yorok Ke'karti Ke'isvei HaSoda is possible because it's a Shinei Mara. It's no different than a black spot. Green is also a shinimara, says the Bach. But the Magen Avraham says, no, green is not a shinimara, but if it's yorok ke'isvei HaSoda, that's a simen ladover, that it's lo nigmar peira, that it's not completely ripe. And that's why it's puzzle. It's puzzle because it's not completely ripe. What's the nafkamina? Let's say it's going to change color. You know it's going to change color. You know it's going to change color. You can tell. You're an expert in the esrog. So even if it's completely green, according to the Magen Avraham, it's kosher, because that means it's ripe. It's ripe enough. If it's going to change color, that means it's ripe enough. But according to the Baal, it doesn't matter. It's a shini mara right now. So the Mishnah Berurah writes, even according to the Magen Avraham, one shouldn't be mekel unless the esrog already started to change color. So lefi the Mishnah Berurah, the Magen Avraham would say that if you have a very green esrog, but it started to change color, it's kosher. According to the Baal, it would still be possible. If the green is on the chotem, certainly it would be possible. The green is not on the chotem, but it's on most of the surface area of the esrog. It also would be possible because it's a shini mara. So how do we paskin in this machlokas? Is green possible or not? We see often people are looking at green esrogim. You know, so does green possible? It's a big machlokas. A big machlokas. Many poskim are mekel. The Mishnah Berurah is mekel. Even the Chazon Ish was mekel. That green is kosher. It's not a shini mara. But the Bikur Yaakov says that a bal nefer should be machmer for the bach. Should be machmer to assume that deep green is puzzle. Rav Shechter is very makbid on green. He doesn't like green. Not even this green. He doesn't like a green esrog. Because he doesn't know what's green. What is Yorok Ke'karti? He's very makbid on green. Other poskim are mekel. I mean, you see, just look at any of the sukkah decorations, right? You see a lot of gedolim are taking a little of an esrog, the esrog are green. So the question is that maybe it's not green. Maybe that's not what we call green. They have a Masorah on what is called Yorok Yisvei Asada, and they assume that a lighter green is not called green. That's presumably what they're holding, right? They assume that that green is kosher. So there's it's a big machlokas in the poskim. There are many poskim who assume that green is just as mahudr as yellow. You know, most of us grow up thinking that the esrog mahudr is like the first picture that we saw, right? The esrog mahudr, you know, this is the esrog that we all dream that we can have. You have to have a pocketbook to be able to wallet to afford it. But if it's not chazanish, you could probably afford it. A chazanish esrog like that, yeah. So that's right. This is what we dream of. But a lot of poskim, they don't care if it's yellow or not. They think the green, the lighter green, is just as much a mara esrog as the yellow esrog. I've seen. They go Rav Schneebald. So he'll take a look at a green esrog, and sometimes it's a shayne esrog. He really sometimes he's very turned on by that. He doesn't care about the yellow and the green. That's the Masorah that they have. That as long as it's not dark green, that's not called green. So if it's not called green, then the whole shayla of the Bach and the Magen Avraham didn't even begin. A person has to have some kind of a Masorah to understand, you know, what is a problem, what's not a problem. Rav Schechter in general is much more machmer when it comes to green.
Even for light green or Schechter machmer?
I don't know exactly. I mean, you have to know what is light, what is not. I think if it's really, really light green, he probably would be more machmer. You have to know what green. Speak to him to find out. But definitely green on the chotem, he'd be very concerned about. But a lot of esrogim that people commonly choose are not so light. You know, they're not as dark as the Yorok Yisvei Asada that I showed you, but they're not so, you know, like this esrog here, right? That's not Yorok Yisvei Asada, but that's pretty green. So I don't think Rav Schechter would be so into such an esrog. You know, this zicha, this is super green, you know? So I'm not sure exactly. I mean, you have to take green esrogim to Rav Schechter to find out exactly what he'd be machmer for. But I think a lighter green, I don't have a picture, but you know, something that doesn't really, you know, it's what's that color called? It's like an olive, like a lighter. An olive could be even darker, but I'm talking about like a lighter type of green. You know, look at that leek. Right, where's the picture of the leek, right? There are multiple shades of green over here. No, this shade of green is far from this. And this is even lighter than that, right? This is already much more yellow. So, you see, there are different gradations. I can't imagine Rav Schechter would be makel for like a very light hue of green. But you have to ask, which is more important in terms of the hiddur of an esrog? The color of the esrog, the cleanliness of the esrog, or the giddel of the esrog? Whether the esrog is symmetrical, or whether it's completely clean. So if you were to ask me, I would say that the symmetry of the esrog is a very important criterion. Because if it's all about hadar, then it's a person's perception, right? Imagine if you have an esrog that's like, you know, leaning to the side. Sometimes you have an asymmetrical esrog, the pitum is like jumping to the side. So it could be very clean, but like it doesn't look so nice. So I would imagine symmetry does play a role, maybe even more than cleanliness. A person who's 1 foot away from you will see the giddel, but he won't see the cleanliness of the esrog. The first glance, I would think that the giddel does play a role. The reality is, many, if not most, Mori Hara, who really are experts on Dalet Minim, they care about the cleanliness and not the giddel. Some of the mamish won't even look at the giddel. If it's a completely clean esrog, let's say it's gevaldik, they don't look at the symmetry at all. I don't know; it just doesn't sit well with me. I think the symmetry should play a role. I remember a number of years ago, Rabbi Simon told the story that Rabbi Willig said about himself that when he goes shopping for an esrog, so he picks out, you know, he looks through, I don't know, 20, 30 esrogim, 50 esrogim, whatever, you know, sees the esrogim there, and he'll pick out, you know, 5 or 6 of them, then he'll take them to his wife. He'll take the final 6 to his wife, and he'll ask her, you know, choose the one that you think is the nicest. You know, the 5 or 6 are all in the same ballpark. So then he takes it to his wife to choose the aesthetic beauty of the esrog, because he feels that she has a better sense of this. So, you see that aesthetic beauty does play a role. It's not just an issue of cleanliness, but aesthetic beauty should play a role. I think giddel does is an important factor to consider. I think cleanliness is also very important. Maybe it's a little more important than the Gittel, but I don't think Gittel should be ignored. I think Gittel should play a role as well. Okay, that concludes our discussion of the Esrog. Questions, yes?
Going back to an earlier part of the Esrog, should we choshish for the Achron if we say that maybe not having Pitam would be less heder?
I don't think so. I think the poskim assume that if it grows that way, if it doesn't have a Pitam, it's okay. If it's a very clean Esrog without a Pitam, I would say it's better than an Esrog with a Pitam if it's not going to be as clean. If it has like brown spots on the chotam. Yes?
Can I please repeat one more time what changes during Chol HaMoed again?
On Chol HaMoed, according to some, right, on Chol HaMoed, there's no psul of on Chol HaMoed, according to everyone, there's no psul of chaser, and according to some, there's no psul of hodar either. But that's a machlokas. The Rambam says there's no psul of hodar on Chol HaMoed. The Mechaber paskins like the Rambam. So Sfaradim would probably be much more makel on Chol HaMoed. The Ramah says there still is a psul of hadar on Chol HaMoed, but there's no psul of chaser. So he said nitla pitmaso is a psul of chaser. So even the Ramah would be willing to be makel, but the mechaber would be makel even a psul of hadar on Chol HaMoed. Okay.
Right.
Yes.
Going back to the first one of that drug, can we just check the? You can check like the DNA of that drug and see if any of it is from a lemon.
I know this is a discussion that I have every year. There's someone from my community who's very into the botany of the Esrog, and he's photocopied all of Dr. Goldschmidt's articles on the Esrog. Dr. Goldschmidt is a famous botanist. He lives in Eretz Yisrael, and he's written a lot about Esrogim. And there are many discussions about this, about the cross pollination of the Esrogim. I'm not such a bucky in botany. I can't tell you. I don't know anything about the DNA. You know, many say that through cross pollination, you're not going to get an Esrog Amurka because it doesn't affect the DNA. And so, if you look at the DNA, you'll see that this is an Esrog. You're saying if you looked at the DNA, you'd see it's an Esrog even if the Simanim don't line up. That's what you're suggesting.
Or if you're concerned that even if you have the Simanim, you want from the Misora to know for sure it's an Esrog, check the DNA so you can see if, how much percent is a lemon or an Esrog.
Right. So I think the answer is the Chasam Sofer would say that if you need a Misora, so then DNA is not going to help you. Because a Masara means that there's some kind of living tradition. Even though, as we described, the living tradition doesn't go back so far. Mm-hmm. Right. I don't know what to do with the DNA testing. I don't know what to say about it. I'm not sure what the view of the poskim is. I hear what you're suggesting. I'm not sure what the poskim hold about that. Yes?
Rabbi touched on this very briefly, but is there room to be more meaningful on the second day versus the first day, or do we treat it like a suffix, like...
I think that's a machlokas or rishonim, so it's probably better to try to be machmer. But certainly Chol HaMoed, one could be mekel. Yes.
Back to the question about the esrog and the misora.
Yes.
Would it be a lechatchila versus b'dieved situation if you have an esrog that has a simanim, you don't have misora, versus one with misora? Like b'dieved, it could work.
For those who are machmer for the chasam sofer, they hold that they won't take a badat esrog. Because they'll say that it's suffik pasul. They'll say it is pasul because they don't have a mesorah. So it's hard to believe that half of Klal Yisrael are taking a esrogim sulim. I don't know. But that's how they hold. You could say it's a chum. Okay, you could say it's a chum. I don't know if they'll pasul a badat esrog, but they won't take it themselves. They'll try not to take it themselves. Now, there's a famous story. Reb Chaim once got an esrog. He got esrogim and esrog from Corfu. I think that was the story that he knew was kosher, but wasn't as mehuder as another esrog that was suffik pasul. So he wanted to take both esrogim. So he actually was machmir, right? What he did was he took the suffik pasul first, even though it was less mehuder, because he was of the opinion that once he takes the esrog that's vaday kosher, he was certainly yotzei. And once he was Yotze, then he wouldn't accomplish anything by taking the Esrog that's more Mahudr. Let's say it's kosher. If it's more Mahudr, but so what? Once he's Yotze, so then there's no such thing as Hidda Mitzvah, because Hidda Mitzvah below Mitzvah lo Shamanu. It's the famous Yisod of the briskets, right? The brisket Rav and his Sefer on the Rambam, the Beis Halevi is a tshuva like that, Neiros Chanukah. So like once you've been Yotze, you put down the Esrog, so that's it. You can't pick up another Esrog. Right? So this is what briskets often do. They go through all the esrogim that might be, you know, suffik pasul, but they're more mehuder, and then they take the last esrog that they know for sure is kosher, but maybe not as mehuder. You know, so then they're sure that they yotzei everything. Okay, we do have a little bit more to cover. Let me take one more question, then we'll go on.
This might be a more general question, but I think like Rav Schachter is known to like pick an answer pretty quickly.
Yes.
Like, how much time slash extra money should we be spending to get the nice answer versus like it's just kosher all the time?
Okay, so we're going to talk about money later, okay? But in terms of time, the question is, what else are you going to do with your time? Okay? So if you're going to be learning in base management, it's one thing, but you know, if you have more time before Yom Tov, so maybe, I'm not talking about you. I'm saying one is going to do with what one is going to do with their time. I will say for Bnei Torah to spend time looking for an esrog. So it's like everything in life. When you invest in something, then it becomes a part of you. You feel more connected to it, and you connect more with the mitzvah. And the mitzvah has a bigger hashpah on you. So I think it's actually a good thing. It's, you know, it's after Yom Kippur, you know. Boys often have a little bit more time. I think it's good to sweat a little bit over an esrog. Sweat a little bit, take an esrog to a posek, learn a little bit about dalet minim, see what you should choose, and you feel a connection to the esrog, you feel a connection to your dalet minim, and then the whole mitzvah becomes a different mitzvah. Let's move on to the lulav. So a lulav is supposed to be fresh. Obviously it should be green. It should be fresh. It should be shakeable, right? You should be able to do what the person called kiskus ha'olim, to shake the lulav. We know nanuim is part of the mitzvah. So the lulav should be shakeable. What are the psulim to look for in a lulav? So not too many. There are a few psulim in a lulav. The most famous psulim in a lulav is what's called nechlika ha'tiyomes. Let's say the tiyomes is split. Now what is the tiyomes? What does that mean, nechlika ha'tiyomes? So that's a machlokas. It's a machlokas harishonim. The rif is of the opinion that we know a lulav is made up of leaves, and each leaf really is a double leaf. So the Rif and the Rambam are of the opinion that the tiyomes refers to every single double leaf in a lulav. So nechlaka hatiyomes means if rove of the leaves of the lulav are split, meaning at the tip of the lulav, the tip of the leaf, the two pieces come together. So if that's split in rove of the olam of the lulav, says the Rif, that's nechlaka tiyomes, and that's possible. Because he understands tiyomes doesn't refer to one leaf, it refers to all the leaves of the lulav. But the Rush quotes from the Gaonim, at Shuvas HaGaonim, that the tiyomes is the middle leaf. The middle leaf. Like in the picture. Right? You have the middle leaf on top. You know, after the shedra ends, you have leaves coming out of the spine. So, at a certain point, you no longer have leaves coming out of the spine, you just have one leaf going to the top. That's the tiyomes. The shedra begins where the tiyomes ends. Right? The shedra begins here, where the tiyomes ends. The shedra, there are leaves coming out of the shedra, and then where there are no more leaves coming out of the shedra, just one leaf, that's the tiyomes, that's the end of the shedra. That's the end of the spine. So the Rosh quotes in the Gaonim a chumra that the tiyomes is that middle leaf. If that middle leaf is split, that's what passes the lulav. Even if only that middle leaf. Only that middle leaf. If that's split, that passes. There's a machlokas, the Mechaber and the Ramah had a paskin. The Mechaber passes like the Rif and the Rambam. That's why Sfardim are not so machmer for nechlaka hatiyomes. Not so machmer? They're not machmer. What's there to be machmer for? I've never seen a lulav that most of the leaves are split. You know, and I've just never seen it. So that's a big kula for Sfardim. But the Ashkenazim follow the Ramah. That's what starts us off on the problem with this chumrah. Ramah says that nechlaka hatiyomes means even if the middle leaf is split. Now, how much does that have to be split to be possible? That's the big question. So the Ritva writes that it has to be rov. Rubo kakulo, if rov is split, then it's like the whole tiyomes is split. That's going to be the problem. And that's the position of Rov Rishonim. Comes the Ran quotes the Yeshomrim, that even if the tiyomes is nechlaka b'mi'uto, even if it's a little bit split, it's also pasul. That's the chumra of the Ramah that shook the world. Right? This Yeshomrim of the Ramah says nechlaka tiyomes is pasul, even if a little bit of the leaf is pasul. Now what does a little bit mean? Even that's the question. What does a little bit mean? So, in explaining this Yeshomrim, the Mishnah Berurah quotes from the Chai Adam that means afilu b'mashu. The Chai Adam's understanding of the Yeshomrim in the Ran, that nechlaka tiyomes means even the middle leaf being split, amashu. That's the big chumah here. Now, what does the Chai Adam mean? What the Chai Adam means is nechlaka tiyomes is pasul because it's like chaser. If it's split, it's not whole. It's even though everything is there, but it's viewed like chaser. So even b'mashu, it's chaser. It's not a lekichatama. It's not a lekichatama. That's really what it means. Not chaser. Ulekachta means it has to be a full lekicha. It's not a lekichatama if it's split. The Mishnah Brura has a little bit of a different understanding here. The Mishnah Brura says that he thinks the reason why this Yeshonim says that Nechlaka b'miyuto is possible is because we're afraid that if it's Nechlaka b'miyuto through the Nanuim, it'll get to be Nechlaka b'rubo. It's like a Chumra d'Rabbanan, that we're afraid that Nechlaka b'miyuto might get to Nechlaka b'rubo. So it's not that intrinsically Nechlaka b'miyuto b'mashu is possible, the Mishnah Brura says. Now it sounds like it's a chashash d'Rabbanan that'll lead to more. Right, so that's a much, more lenient type of chumra, right? It might be posel. It's not because it's a lekicha. It's not a lekicha tama. It's a lekicha tama, but you shouldn't take it, right? You shouldn't take that lulav because we're afraid it'll lead to more. But can you make a bracha on the lulav the first day? And according to the Mishnah Brura, it sounds like we're just afraid it'll. It'll get worse. We're afraid it'll get worse. The Mishnah Brura quotes from the Vilna Gaon that Ladina, one shouldn't be machmir for this unless it's Nechlaka Berubo. That's what he says. So the Vilna Gaon says, look, even the Ran, it's not clear that the Ran held of the Yeshonim. He quotes the Yeshonim, but he wasn't choshish for the machmir. The Shulchan Aruch certainly is not concerned about Nechlaka Tiyomis just in the middle leaf. So he says, if it's not Nechlaka Berubo, you don't have to be Machmir at all. So the Mishnah Brura concludes that if you have two lulavim and one is not split, the other one is split. So obviously you should take the one that's not split. But to drive yourself crazy, to find the lulav that's not split, you're not mechuyev to go crazy over this. Because it's just to get Yeshomim in the Ran, and it's not so clear that we have to be Machmir for that Yeshomim in the Ran. The Poskim do add something else, though. And they say that there might be another reason why it's kedai to be machmir for mashu, and that is that there's a different psul that they talk about that's called Ovid Kehemnik. Right? If you learn the Gemara in Sukkos on Aflamet Beis Amanal, there's a picture of like a pitchfork or something. Ovid Kehemnik. If the tiomes is like a hemnik, so then it's possible. It's like a fork. It's possible. But this picture is like trying to. A little bit. You have a tiomes. It comes up. Sometimes you have a tiomes, comes up to the top. And if you look at it, if you play with it a little bit, you'll see that it actually is split. It's split. If you put it down on the table, it looks like it comes together. But if you pick it up, then you notice. Pick it up and then you separate the leaves. Be careful. You can separate the leaves a little. Nothing's going to happen to it. But just be careful. Don't touch the top. You separate the leaves like the previous picture. If you separate the leaves. So you can see the tiomas. You see the leaves go right back to it. Don't bend it. You separate the leaves a little bit. But sometimes, even without separating it, you see that the tiomas is separate on top. They're like pointing. The tops are pointing away from each other. So somehow machmir to assume that's a hemnik. It's a hemnik because even if you put the lulav down on the table and all the leaves come together, you still see that those two pieces are separating from each other. It's like they're it grew like that and it's like separated from each other. So that might be worse. That's more than Nechlaka Tiyomis B'mashu. That's Ovid Kehemnik. And the Poskim say, some Poskim say that there's a Levush Esrad that says that Ovid Kehemnik even B'mashu is possible. So you'll see, you walk around, you'll show your lulav to someone and say, if it's split, is it Nechlaka? So look at it. Oh, it might be a Hemnik. There's a whole language that you have to learn just to go into the shul to understand what people are talking about. So a Hemnik is that if they're afraid that it's separate in a way that can't come together, then that might be more of a chum. That might be more of a problem. It's always better to get a lulav that's not split. Look, the reality is, now they have deri lulav. Deri lulav like totally changed the whole equation of it. It used to be they had Egyptian lulav. They were much weaker, not so good. You could go through lulav and you couldn't find the lulav that's not split. The deri lulav are expensive, but if you're willing to spend the money, it's much easier to find a lulav that's not split. I'm not so sure that you're mechuyev to spend the money for a deri lulav. Everyone has to know what the bank account, what's in your bank account. But that's the halacha. Now, halacha is that nechlekat yomes will passel if it's berubo. If it's only b'mashu is a chumra, obed kehemnik might be a problem b'mashu as well. You have to judge. You have to judge. You have to ask what it is. You have to figure out, you know, what chumra you have to be choshish for. Now, sometimes people feel like let me take a lulav that's covered with what's called kara. Right? Kara is like the brown stuff. You know, there's like brown stuff on the edge of the, on the tip of the lulav. So I feel like, why should I get involved in the nechlekat yomes problem? Let me just take it with the kara, and then I'm okay. You're not so okay. You know, most poskim say you should not take a lulav that has the kara, that has the brown on top. Sometimes if you have the brown on top, they start to, they fiddle with it. Give it to the mocha, you don't fiddle with it. Right? If you fiddle with the brown, it'll come up, but sometimes you'll split the top of the lulav by doing it. So don't touch the brown, let the mocha do it. That's it's his geshef, that's his problem. But the reason why poskim don't like to take a lulav that has the brown on top of it is because, first of all, you don't know if it's nechlaka. The tiyomus could be nechlaka below the brown, but you don't even know. You don't even know if it's nechlaka. That's one thing. But the other reason they don't like it is because when there's kara on top, when there's the brown on top, so you can't get the good kiskus. You can't get the shaking of the leaves of the lulav because it's attached together. So and that's a hither. The hither is you're supposed to be able to do nanuam with the lulav. So most poskim would say not to buy a lulav that's covered with the kara on top. Okay, so one psul in the lulav is nechlekat yomes. The other psul is lulav akum, if the lulav is bent. If the lulav is bent. Akum or kafuf. So either akum means it's curved, and kafuf means that it's bent. Akum means that it's curved to the side. You know, the lulav can be curved to the side. Sometimes it's curved a little bit forward. Right, the lulav is curved forward on the shedron. If it's curved back, they say that's okay. Right? But akum is only possible if it's akum domo lamagam. If it's curved, so it looks like a sickle. And it's curved. You know what a sickle looks like. Right? So if it's curved so much that it's like it looks like a sickle, so then it's possible. Now, most curves that we have is a little bit curved. So it's not curved like a sickle. It's not going to be possible. But it's a chumra. It's a hither. The lulav should be as straight as possible. Kafuf, what's kafuf? Kafuf means it's bent. It's bent a little bit on top. Not that the whole shedra is curved, it's like a little bit bent, like here. Right? It's bent a little bit. So the poskim talk about, let's say it's only bent, let's say only the tiomes is bent, or right? If the are we talking about the tiomes is bent, or the whole top of the lulav is bent? Only the tiomes? Right? If even only the tiomes is bent, that's going to be a problem? So there's an interesting rush. The rush writes in a tshuva that he actually likes to take a lulav. He liked to take a lulav that's bent. Because you know why I like to take the lulav that's bent? Because when it's bent, when it's kafuf, this kafuf thing is called a kneppel. It's another Yiddish. You have to buy a Yiddish lexicon. A kneppel is where it's bent on top. Some chassidim like to take a kneppel, like the Rush. He says, I like it because it's not nechlika. The tiomis will never be nechlika in that case. But the Ran argues. The Ran says, even if it's kafuf in that middle leaf, he says, I think it's possible. He doesn't like it. So it's a Shailen Poskim. The Shulchan Aruch actually is Mekel for the Rosh. But the Mishnah Berurah says one should be Machmer for the Ran. So it's better to take a lulav. It doesn't have kara on top. It doesn't have a kneppel. You know, it should be as whole as possible. The less split it is, the better. And it should be as straight as possible. You know, they quote in the Torah's Dalet Minim, he quotes from the Chazon Ish. Chazon Ish says the lulav is bent a little bit, didn't bother him. Didn't bother him at all. He says the Gemara says doma lemagal is possible. It's not doma lemagal. It's not a problem. So you don't have to discuss it. But other gedolim were very they're machmer that the stipler, the biskirav, they tried to ensure that the lulav was as straight as possible. You know, you take the lulav and you turn it sideways. You see exactly where it is. Look at it straight. You look at it that way. You see how straight it is. You can get a lulav that's straight. It's much easier. It used to be 20 years ago. It was much harder to shop for lulavim. Now it's much easier, especially with the dairy lulav, but even stam lulav, they're much better quality now. Because the Jewish community is much bigger, so, you know, and more mochrim got into the business. So they plant more lulav, so they plant more lulav, they have more schora, so, they're able to sell more. There's more choice. It's all about choice. So if you have the choice, then it's easier to find the lulav that you're looking for. Okay, let's move to the hadas. Yes, question, quick question.
Yeah. Would Rabbi say
dairy lulav? Dairy lulav, yeah.
Can you
maybe
spell that?
Deri, lulav deri. Yeah, you can't miss it. Deri is spelled Dalet, Ayin, Resh, Yud. Deri. like the famous Deri, the name Deri in Eretz Yisrael, right? It's the same idea, right? That's it's the name. It must have been a man Deri who planted them. I don't know where he found these Ulovim, but like he totally turned everything upside down. These Ulovim are. When I was growing up, I think people would have salivated over a Deri lulav. You know, you couldn't get a lulav that was so thick. The lulav were all thin. They were tzibrochen. They were thin. It was so. Now your mamish every bentara could be a gvir. You know, you feel like you have a lulav. You actually have to be a gvir to afford them. No, it's not that big. But a Deri lulav can cost. Again, I don't know with inflation. I don't know what it's going to be this year. But it used to be you get a Deri lulav for $50-$60. You could, and erev yom tov if you get them for cheaper. Now that's always the. It's always the trick. If you're willing to wait, if you're willing to take a risk, you know, the question is how risk averse you are or how risk loving you are. That's it. You know, if you're an investment banker, we can tell you based on your investment style what you'll do in terms of buying Dalamin. That's the issue. The closer it comes to Yom Tov, the cheaper everything becomes. You can buy a Deri Lulav of Yom Tov for $30-$40. You know, but the question is if you're willing to wait. Yeah.
How much we rely on
a shkacha this, a shkacha that. How much can that be relied upon? You have to recognize who the shkacha is. There are many badatsim that we do recognize. Badatsim in Bnei Brak and Yerushalayim and in America and New York. You have to be able to recognize. So it's just a person puts his name on this. David Schwartz says, you know, a generic name. What does it mean? The answer is if it has a stamp on it. So normally we do recognize some of the names there. So then you can follow them. They're not saying they went themselves, but they have people who work for them. They train them. They have Talmid Chacham that work for them, and they go check out the orchards and they make sure everything is done kedasa kedim. Okay, the hadas, we know that you have to have three hadasim. What's the length of the hadas? It has to be gimel tefachim. What is gimel tefachim? Rav Moshe holds that a tefach is 3.6 inches. That would be 10.8. About 11 inches would have to be, the Chazon Ish would say, about 11 and a half or 12 inches or so. You know, Chazon Ish would be a little bit more. How do we measure hadasim? How do we measure the 11, 12 inches? Where does it go? Where does it go? From where to where? So the Mishnah Berurah quotes from the Rishonim, that we don't count the stem. We only count the stem. We don't count the leaves. Meaning, on the top of the hadas, you'll see there's a certain point we don't have stem anymore. It's just sort of like leaves. Leaves that sort of like collect on top. So that doesn't count for the shear. It has to be stem with leaf. Stem with leaf. So we start at the first grouping of the leaves. I don't even have a picture. Okay, at the first grouping of the leaves on the bottom, you know, sometimes you'll have like a little bit of stem on the bottom, 2-3 inches. That doesn't count. You start with the first grouping of leaves, and then it goes up to the end of the stem. That's what you need the shear from. Okay. We know that the hadas, it says anaf eitz avos, the hadas has to be mishulish, it has to be in triplicate. Mishuloshim. What does it mean, mishulish? So Rashi has a famous shita. Rashi says that the three leaves have to be coming out of the same spot. The same cane, right? Same spot. Tosfos says it's a chumri yaseirin. You're not going to find such a das. So Tosfos says it's enough. Tosfos in the Rosh, they say it's enough if the smuchim udvukim zebazeh. If the leaves are smuchim udvukim zebazeh, they're very close to each other. So what does that mean? So the Chazon Ish was of the opinion that what that means is as long as they're close enough to each other. You see, notice in all three of these pictures, they're not coming out of the same spot, but they're close enough to each other. In this case, if you draw a line, the stems will be on the same line. Even here, one stem is above the other, but if you draw a line, you'll see the stems are together. But here, if you draw a line, anywhere by this stem, it's not going to be with the other stem. That's not mishulash according to the Chazon Ish, because they're below each other. Okay, so it doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be literally coming out of the same okets, but as they say, to explain Pshat and Taisus, they say if there's a kav nifkash, that's the lashon that the Chil Michel Stern uses. Chazon Ish holds, if there's a kav nifkash, the line will meet the stems, then that's enough to be called mishulish, and it's not called a hadashota. Now, what's the din if the leaves come off? Oh, that's the question. So it's a big machlokas in the Rishonim. Some Rishonim are so machmer, they say, even if one leaf comes off, even if one within the shear, even if one leaf comes off and it's not mishulash, then it's pasul. The other extreme is the Rambam. The Rambam is the biggest megill. He says, even if you have one group of three leaves remaining, it's kosher. And we hold like the middle. The middle is lechatchila, it should be kulo mishulosh. But b'di'evit, if it's ruba mishulosh, it's okay. That's what we hold. So you should try to have kulo mishulosh, which means that now hadasim, totally different world. You buy hadasim that are closed containers, right? It used to be that they would throw out hadasim on the table, and you'd have to check yourself. Now there's a bezdin that's saying that someone check them. The kulo mishulosh aleph beis. No one's a beis. Right, aleph plus all these different chazanish of chaim nor of moshe. So the rule is, it's always best to get the aleph chazanish. If you get the best stuff, then even if something is missing, it still will be the shir. You'll still have enough in the shir, right? The pashup shot is, when we talk about rov mishulish, it doesn't have to be consecutive. It just has to be, you know, a shir. If you have more than 11 or 12 inches, you have 14 inches, and rove of that is mishulish, that's okay, right? L'chadchili, you should want to have kula mishulish. So if you buy the aleph, chazanish, so it could be that even if you're missing a little bit on the bottom, right, maybe a leaf or two, maybe you'll have enough that it'll still be kula mishulish, and you'll be okay. Some people buy a little bit extra, buy another packet or so, and you'll figure, even if one is not mishulish, but you have the others, it's best to get the kula mishulish. But if it's not kul mishulosh, if it's rov mishulosh b'di'evit, that's okay. That's okay. I want you to be very careful when you put the hadasim into the koshikol, that you do it very carefully, because you'll spend money on the kul mishulosh, and then you'll turn it into rov mishulosh by putting it into the koshikol. So be careful when you put it into the holder, that you're not going to take off any leaves. And of course, aside from being mishulosh, the hadas also, the leaves have to be straight. They shouldn't be jagged. They shouldn't be serrated. They should be smooth. And the leaves should be elongated. They shouldn't be circular. They should be elongated. They don't have these simonim, so then we're afraid there might be a hadashote. Hadashote is, of course, possible. Aravas. What does an arava look like? So the simone arava, the Gemara says there are three simonim for the arava. One is that the stem is red. Secondly, the ola, the leaves, are elongated. And thirdly, it should be smooth. Red stem, elongated leaf, smooth edge. The Rama in Tuf Resh Mem Zayin Sif Aleph quotes on the Beis Yosef that even if the stem is not red, it's still kosher. If the stem is white, then that's not an arava, that's a tzavtzafa, that's possible. But if it's green, let's say, very commonly you'll have aravas that the stem is green, it's not so red. So that's okay, that's not a problem. That's good, says the Rama. What other psulim are there with the arava? So the Mishnah Berurah says niktam roshe, if the top is cut off, that's pasul. Or yovshu rov alea, if the leaves dry up. With aravas, you have a problem if the leaves dry up. With hadasim, generally the hadasim, the leaves are not going to dry up over yom tov. It takes a little bit longer than that for the leaves to dry up. But the aravas do dry up. They turn black. It's not as mahudar. I'm not sure that black is necessarily, unless it's not mamish, completely black. Still, it's, you know, it has to dry even more than that, but it has to be almost brittle to really be yavish. But it's certainly not mehudah. Once it starts to get black, then it's not mehudah, because it's more yavish. Better to try to avoid it. Better to get aravos that are not black. And sometimes over yom tov, depending on how you keep the lulav and esrog and the dalet minim, sometimes aravos will get black over yom tov. So it's not such a bad thing to buy extra aravos in the middle of Chol HaMoed. You can switch them. If you can't put them in water or you can't put them in the refrigerator and they're going to turn black, so it's good to switch the aravos in the middle of yom tov if you get fresh aravos. Some are machmer with the aravos to buy what's called arava with a lavluv. A lavluv. You sometimes see that with the arava mochrin. What's a lavluv? Lavluv means at the top of the arava you have like a little like piece, like almost like a hair coming out, like a little leaf coming out of the top. What's the inyan of a lavluv? So the answer is, the lavluv shows that it's not niktam. If you don't have a lavluv, it's not clear that it's not niktam. The top just ends. So it could be cut off. It might not be cut off. But if you have a lavluv, so then that's a raya that it's not niktam. That's a hiddur. That's a hiddur in the arava to buy with a lavluv. Just an Eitz HaTova kamash malan, you should know that those aravas that have the lavluv somehow are often weaker, they're softer, and they dry up more quickly than the aravas that don't have the lavluv. So you know, pick your poison. You have to figure out what you want. If you buy a rebus with a lablu, you might have to exchange them in the middle of Yom Tov. So some people might feel it's worth it. And other people feel like, I look at the Arava, if it doesn't look like it's nikdan, then I'll take it because it's okay. Yes?
I think Rebbe might have just answered the question, but in terms of Aravas being like dried out, is it, when you look at them and they just look dried out, or do they feel like they're falling off or anything like that?
You see, if the Arava is dried out, so then not only is it black, but then the leaves start to crumble, the leaves start to like, what should I say, like they're falling. You know, if you have an Arava that's healthy, so the leaves are jumping out, right? But as it starts to dry, so then it turns black and the leaves, you know, wilt a little bit. So again, I don't think that that's yavish. Yavish means it has to be a little bit drier. But it's certainly not as mehudar because it's you know, it's heading in that direction. It's getting more dry. Better to try to avoid that if at all possible. Okay, what are some of the pratim when it comes to the buying of the lulav and esrog? Maybe actually before we get there, maybe let me mention one part about the length of the lulav and esrog, the hadassim and the aravos. So we know. So the Mishnah says that the hadassim and the aravos have to be a shear gimel tefachim, and the lulav has to be four tefachim. It has to be one tefach more, so you can shake the lulav. It has to be on top of the hadassim and the aravos. How do you measure the lulav? So we sort of alluded to this, but it's very important to keep this in mind. The lulav is measured from the shidra. This is the position of the ram. It's measured from the shidra. So you have to separate the leaves of the lulav till you get to the point where the tiyomis begins. That's the end of the shedra. So the lulav has to stick out one tefach past the hadassim and the aravos. So sometimes the hadassim and the aravos are more than the shear. They're more than the 11 inches or the 12 inches. So you have to just make sure that the lulav sticks out past them. Sometimes you see people walking around with the lulav and esrog, and the hadassim and the aravos seem to go like mamash to the top of the lulav. That's inappropriate. The lulav has to be a tefach above the hadassim and the aravos. So that means a tefach of the lulav. The lulav means the shedra has to stick out a tefach above. That's the proper way to tie the lulav with the hadassim and the aravos. Okay, in terms of buying a lulav and esrog, so we know there's a concept of hidur mitzvah. The Gemara in Bava Kama, Daf Tes and Beis, says, Hidda mitzvah ad shlish b'mitzvah. How much do you have to spend on Hidda mitzvah? A third. What does it mean a third? It's a shayla in the Gemara, whether shlish milabar or shlish milagav. Is the shlish from the inside or is it from the outside? Lamasha, let's say you're buying something, let's say the mitzvah costs $6, let's say. Right? $60. Right? The mitzvah can cost $60. So you have to spend, if it's shlish milagav, that means that you're taking a shlish from the inside, so you have to spend an extra 20. If it's shlish milabar, that means shlish from the outside, that means after you spend for hidda mitzvah, then the hidda is going to be a third of what you spent, which is another way of saying a half. Right? Meaning if you spend $30 more, so now the mitzvah costs $90, what's a third of 90? 30. Right? So you've now spent a shlish on the hidda. You spent a half of the mitzvah, but that's actually the shlish, because that's shlish milabar. So it's a shaila in the Gemara, whether we measure shlish milagav or shlish milabar. So, of course, let's assume, I mean, it's a machlokas had a paskin, but the Mishnah Berura is machmer that you should spend shlish milabar. So, when it comes to lulav and esrog, l'chora, one should determine how much lulav and esrog costs to get a kosher at lulav and esrog. And the chiyuv is to spend a little bit more on the hidden. Like, let's say you can get a kosher lulav and esrog for $60. So it's just an easy number to work with. If you can get a kosher lulav and esrog for $60, so then it's appropriate to spend $90. You should spend $90 because you should spend an extra $30 to get hidda mitzvah as well. And of course, if it's more than that, so you should spend more than that, whatever it should be. But that's all. There's no mitzvah to spend $150. Right? There's no mitzvah to spend more on the hidda. The hidda is actually shlish mitzvah. Rabbi Shechter is very adamant about this. He holds that one should spend at shlish b'mitzvah, determine, talk to the mochim, figure out how much it costs to buy a lulav and esrog that's kosher, and then one should spend a shlish on top of that, and that's it. And whatever extra money you wanted to spend on a lulav and esrog, on dalet minim, you should give it to tzedakah. He says, that's what I do. That's what he says. He says, I give the rest to tzedakah. I don't buy. Maybe that's why he picks a lulav and esrog quickly, because he doesn't want to spend extra money. He buys a lulav and esrog that he thinks is worth a little bit more then the esrog and the luv and esrog that are kosher, buys with hid a mitzvah, archlish for mitzvah, and the rest of it he gives to tzedakah. The reality is most people don't do that. They're not going to give. They give a lot of tzedakah. People give a lot of tzedakah. But if you tell them, buy a lulav and esrog that's only $120 and give the rest of the tzedakah, they're not going to give the rest of the tzedakah because they're not going to be able to estimate how much it would have been, how much they would have spent. They're just not going to do it. So if you tell people to do that, I just think most people are just going to spend less on the mitzvah. I think we spend so much on luxuries that we don't need that I don't think it's inappropriate for a person to spend a little bit more on a mitzvah. A lulav and esrog, it's right after Yom Kippur. It's a wonderful opportunity to show HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we care about mitzvahs, that we want to beautify the mitzvah as much as we can. Now, there still is a limit. A person should not overspend either. I think that's a message that you should give to Balabatim. You don't have to overspend either, but a person who has the wherewithal, a person who's going to take an expensive vacation later in the year, a person who's going on an expensive vacation for Sukkot itself, you know, he can spend more than $60 for his lulav and esrog, more than $90 for his lulav and esrog. No, it might be appropriate to do. So I think that's the kind of feeling that should be given over to the Balabatim. That a person has to understand what he spends his money for. If he's going to give tzedakah, he's going to give thousands of dollars in tzedakah instead of the extra for the dalet minim. So Reb Schechter is right. Maybe that's the appropriate thing to do. But if a person is willing to spend a little bit of extra money and to show a chavivus for the mitzvah, I don't think it's a bizbuz. I don't think it's a waste of money. I think it's a nice way to spend the money. But again, every person has to know themselves. Don't spend extra money because you want to have a nice lulav and esrog because everyone else has a nice lulav and esrog. A person has to spend money because it's appropriate. And every person on their own level, it's like that with all hidurim. You know, Rabbi Shechter likes to say that if a lady wears jewelry, on top of pajamas, it's ridiculous. A person has to be on a level where the jewelry, where the hiddur is going to beautify the person. It's going to beautify the mitzvah, and it's appropriate for the person. So every person has to realize for themselves what level, lulav and esrog, they should have, what's the appropriate level for them. Okay, can I take your question in just a moment? There's another very important shaila that poskim talk about, and that is, how do we pay for dalet minim? So we know dvar Torah mos konos, minat Torah, we can be koned with kesef, but Chazal were misakin. The Gemara Bava Metzia says that there was a gzeirah shamiyomu nifsuf uchitecha ba'aliyah. We're not going to explain what that means right now, but Chazal say that meshicha is koned metaltli, not kesef. So, but some hold that minat Torah, since minat Torah dvar Torah, we paskin dvar Torah mos konos, machlokas amaroyim. We paskin minat Torah dvar Torah mos konos, this is a mitzvah daraisa. Maybe, right? This year, Yom Tov Sheni, Safek Yom Tov Rishon, we don't have Yom Tov Rishon, right? On Chol HaMoed, it's not a mitzvah d'araisa, it's a Zech LeMikdash. But at least one day, it's a Safek, a mitzvah d'araisa, so maybe we should be machmer that V'ar Torah Mos Konos. So we bedavka should try to pay with money. This is a chumr of the Machne Ephraim. Machne Ephraim in Hilchas Kinyan Meshicha says that one should be machmer to pay dafka with ma'os for the Luv and Esrog, because we want to make sure that you actually own it, Minat Torah. And then there's a further discussion in the poskim, what's the din of a check? Is a check called money? Is it not called money? A further din of the poskim. Rav Shechter thought that this whole chumrah, they don't have to be choshish for this chumrah. Why? Because it's true, there's a discussion whether Dvar Torah Mos Konos or not, but everyone agrees that chatzar is konim in a Torah. So if someone takes the luv and esrog home, if a balabas takes the luv and esrog home to his house, so his house is konim, his chatzar is going to be konim in a Torah. So he doesn't need the money, he doesn't need the check, he doesn't need the mos. So The chumrah of the Machne Ephraim, Rav Shechter holds, it's a chumrah that he doesn't see the need for it. Because once you take it home, then chatzar is going to be konim and atar. When Talmidim pressed Rav Shechter, so he admitted that for Talmidim of the yeshiva, for Bnei Torah, who are not married, who don't have their own home, so maybe there's room for the chumrah of the Machne Ephraim, because you don't own the house, you don't own the backyard, it's your parents' home. So you don't have kinyan chatzar. So you don't have kinyan chatzar. So maybe there's room to be machmer for the Machne Ephraim to pay with cash, so that you know for sure that you're gonna own the luv and esrog come Yom Tov time. I think the way the mochim normally do it is that give them a check. They take the checks to the bank that day. Even if you give it erev Yom Tov, they're gonna cash all the checks, make sure that they're all deposited, so that everyone is gonna be yotzei kedasu kedin. So it's probably okay even if you pay by check, but sama machmer to try to, you know, to get cash out of the bank, so you'll be able to pay with cash, so that you'll own it in a Torah l'chol adeis. The Musar Haskel in the Dalet Minim is to always look at your own. You know, people spend time to look for a good esrog, to look for a lulav, and you know, Sometimes you can't find the esrog that's completely clean on top. You have a brown spot or some tiny dot or something, but you see it. You see it, and it troubles you, and you know. And then you look, you're in shul, and you see a little of an esrog by someone else, and wow, his gittel is amazing, and it just looks beautiful. He's beautiful esrogim, like you have in the sefer over here. Now, but then when you come closer, you see he also has brown spots on his esrog. So that's the musar, haskil of luv and esrog. Is look at yourself. Look at yourself. We try to repair ourselves, try to be masakin ourselves to the best of our ability. Don't look at someone else. Trust me, they have the same bledloch, or the same brown dots that you have, they have too. Everyone should look at themselves and try to improve themselves as best they can. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants. He wants us to try our best. Try our best to choose a dalad minim that's as mehudar as possible, that's within our budget, we can serve him properly. That's what he wants. He wants not to look at someone else, but to look at ourselves and to do the best we can. We know that about Lulav and Esrog, it says, "Usmachtem lefi Hashem lekechem shves yom," that in the Beis HaMikdash, there was an inyan of simcha all the days of Yom Tov. And we take the Lulav and Esrog zecha lemikdash as a zecha to that usmachtem. That's what the Lulav and Esrog is about. It's supposed to be a source of simcha. It's not supposed to be a source of travail, of difficulty, of challenge. People feel it's so difficult. I can't get a Lulav and Esrog that I like. No, it should be a source of simcha. We have to try our best. We daven for siyata d'shmaya. We daven for the siyata d'shmaya that we should be able to get a proper luv and esrog, a luv and esrog that will make us feel connected to the mitzvah. And hopefully when we connect to the mitzvah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should be mekabel all of our tefillos, and he should be mezakeh us with the gemar chasim of tova, with the shnas chayim mishalom.